Welcome to Absolute Truth Absolutely, the weekly podcast powered by LWYM and your host, Gio. If you're uncompromising in your search and preservation of the truth, you've come to the right place. Now here's your host, Gio, with Pastor Jesus Martinez.
Hello, ladies and gents. Another edition of Absolute Truth Absolutely, powered by LWYM, and this is your host, Gio. I'm the youth leader of LWYM, and with me, as always, is our faithful servant and pastor of Living Word Church, and also my father, Jesus Martinez.
Thank you, Gio, for once again allowing me to share in this time that the Lord has given you to share with God's people, and just maybe throw in my 50 cents worth.
Well, it's more than 50 cents worth. I guess when you're disseminating the truth, it's more valuable than gold, like the Bible calls it.
That's true. That's true. Sometimes we throw that saying around, but there is no price to truth. Its value is beyond our numerical capacity, right?
You know, before we continue with a little clip I wanted to play here for our audience, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was writing an article recently on how students can protect not only their rights but the truth, because if there are those that don't take charge or charge themselves with the ability to preserve the truth, then who is? Because we live in a generation now that tries to eradicate truth once and again. I was reading recently, I'm a huge history buff, and I was recently reading Bill O'Reilly's book, Killing Lincoln. And Lincoln happens to be one of my favorite presidents for the Emancipation Proclamation and whatnot. And he goes in depth into some of the things that occurred a couple of weeks before his death. And this is stuff that I remember when I'm reading this, I wasn't taught any of this in school. This is stuff that you were taught because you come from a different generation, but you've seen how truth has been eroded, where there are those that would try to leave it behind, to leave it as something as pseudo-history.
Well, revisionism has definitely kicked in, and so everything is being redefined, and history has taken probably the biggest whack of all the things that have been revised.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we want to play a clip here, and before we comment on it, we're going to, again, play. It's a music clip from a, well, go ahead and listen to it, and we'll comment on it now. For those of you that heard this, you might have heard this for the first time. There might be those of you that have heard this song before, because we do get an audience, a sector of our audience is youth-based, they're students. And I'd like to go run over some of those lyrics before we continue.
Let's do it.
And we quote, it says, "All the other kids with the pumped-up kicks, you'd better run, outrun my gun. All the other kids with the pumped-up kicks, you'd better run faster than my bullet."
That's in other words, if you've got a pair of sneakers that I'm interested in, and I see you wearing them, I'm going to point my gun at you and have you turn them over to me.
Now, somebody might listen to the song and say, well, that's a catchy beat, and not listen to the lyrics. Isn't that what most people say nowadays? I listen to the song because of the beat. It's attracting. It's pulsating. It gets me to move. But so, what happens to the lyrical content?
So if it's just about a beat, how come they can sing them from the first letter to the last dot?
It gets ingrained. But my question is, because, again, a lot of young people listen to us. They are putting this stuff in their iPods and their iPads and their computers, and they've got the headphones plugged in, it seems, from the morning time, from the moment they get up in the morning to the afternoon. And they're listening to this stuff, and I hear the excuses, and you've heard them all of the time. I love to listen to this because of the repetitive beat, it gets me moving. I really don't pay attention much to the lyrics, even though, in essence, what they're trying to say is that I know the lyrics are detrimental, but I listen to it because of the rhythmic composition, not because of the lyrical content. Is this fallacious or what?
Well, it's amazing to me that we are the generation that has popularized you are what you eat, and we think this is so in the natural realm, in the physical realm, and then in the intellectual, in the spiritual, it seems like, you know, we obviously are saying it's not true, it's not applicable in the spiritual realm. And I believe it's most certainly applicable in the mental, in the intellectual, in the emotional, in the spiritual realm. And so they are consuming this, and it is turning them, fashioning them into what these lyrics are saying and conveying.
Now, I want to talk about substance over style, or rather, style over substance, because this is part of what we want to comment about this, and there's a greater depth to and greater truth to all of this. But before I continue, that clip is from the song Pumped Up Kicks. It was as high as number 3 on the iTunes most downloaded list, and it is being performed currently by Foster the People and broadcast on radio stations nationwide. The reason I brought this up, and I think it's important that we comment on this, is because we live in a generation, and this is something that you and I have spoken on repeated or about on repeated occasions. This is the generation of style over substance, and this can be a very dangerous proposition. Why? Well, let's just use one example. Our current president, Barack Hussein Obama. Most people ignored what his background was, what his ideology encompasses, what he espouses. This is a man whose campaign began with an individual who headed the Weather Underground, Bill Ayers, who is a known domestic terrorist, and he never apologized for it. He tried to brush it off during the campaign trail, and the media cornered him maybe once, the liberal media, that is. You know, they don't want to expose us because he was their darling. He said, well, yeah, well, and he tried to excuse it away. And that wasn't it, Reverend Jeremiah Wright. This guy is a radical. He's a non-Christian, by the way. The stuff that he preaches is not the gospel. But the stuff that comes out of his mouth, you know, like GD America, well, you can fill in the space. You know what we're talking about. And people said, no, he's a charismatic individual. He's very well spoken. Of course he wants change. What do you mean? What kind of change? People like us, we were asking, what kind of change? You can't just bring change because of change. The Nazis wanted change and they got it. But then, no, everybody's, no, but, you know, he looks so nice and he's so well-spoken. Let's put him in the presidency. And now we're paying the consequences for it. It's just another example of style over substance.
I think if we rewind a little bit, or if we look for the root of the problem, we need to go back to the fact that the Bible has clearly defined sin. And once God has defined sin, we need to understand that it will destroy us. If you touch it, if you mess with it, if you use it in your life, if you give it space, it will destroy you. So how does the devil, how does the liberal part of our society bring that down in order to introduce, usher in their harm? Well, in Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 9, it says, "Fools make a mock at sin." There are different translations to this verse, but at its core, what it's saying is that we start joking about sin. We have a simplistic way, a funny way, a degrading way of looking at those that think that sin is an important issue and that we should stay away from it. And so we start attacking it from these angles. And then, you know, here comes Hollywood, and here comes the people that have an opinion, a platform in our society. And all of a sudden, sin is no longer that bad. You know, we can make jokes about it, and we can mock it. And next thing you know, Gio, for sin to be abounding in your life is not a big issue.
Yeah.
And so we sing about it, and we make movies about it, and we joke about it. Next thing you know, it's everything is welcomed. And I think this is at the root of what we are dealing with here. When we hear lyrics of this nature, of this kind, and people are not offended, the damage has been done. Yeah. We now sing about it. We now talk about it. We joke about it. We promote it. It's in our society, and it's no big deal. It's just a fad that the kids are going through. But then, in real life, you hear of this situation that this group is singing about in high school happening every day.
Yeah. Well, we can go back as Columbine, for example. And even now, you can identify it with the Occupy Wall Street protest. How many rapes are going on a daily basis that we're hearing about now? Very disgusting scenarios, unsanitary situations.
And it's about, I want what you have and I'm going to take it for you. I look at the lyrics. All the other kids with the pumped up kicks, you'd better run, outrun my gun. It's all about me taking what you own. I want it. I'm going to get it. Whether it's through an entitlement program or by holding a gun to your head, I'm going to get that. In Venezuela, just recently, the news just came out, one of the major leagues up-and-coming stars, a catcher, was held at gunpoint, taken from his house at gunpoint, sequestered, and we still don't know how much they're going to ask for him. But what you want, what you have worked hard for, I'm going to take it from you. I'm either going to get it because I'm going to get the government to side with me, or I'm just going to force it away from you and hold it and keep it because I think I deserve it. I have to have it. And it all starts, Gio, by making sure that we take the wall of separation between ourselves and sin and bring it down, and then the floods, you know, sin, come into our lives and destroy us.
Well, isn't the underpinning here permissiveness? Because I think that's what it is. I think when young people and adults likewise, because I think they're both at fault. Look, I've always been a believer in it takes two to tango. It's not just one party that's guilty here. It's both parties. When a young couple decides to, or rather, let me rephrase that, when a young teenager has sex and has a baby, it's not just the girl's fault. It's also the man who impregnated her or the boy that impregnated her. It takes two to tango. It's the same situation here. A lot of times you'll see that the kids, they're listening to the stuff, and they say to their parents, I'm just trying to explore the world. And the parents say, yeah, you know what? That's true. I was young also. I wanted to experiment. Why don't you let the kid experiment? So they're both at fault because they're trying to excuse away the young man's or young woman's libertinism, their desires.
That's hellish reasoning.
Yeah.
I've heard women say, well, if they're going to have sex, they might as well have it. I've heard this in my house and protected sex.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to say it's okay to have sex in your room, and here are some condoms.
Yeah. But isn't that pushing the boundaries? To the point where now society becomes desensitized. You said something interesting in a sermon the other day. And it's that even when a lie gets repeated so many times, people eventually accept it as truth. And when the truth is then disseminated or mentioned, they'll call the truth a lie because now they've come to believe a lie. It's been repeated so much. It's been promoted so much, the idea. And all of a sudden, people say, well, if everybody's repeating it, then it must be true, instead of them undertaking the task of finding out of whether something is true or not. So now they've come to believe a lie, and now when the truth is right in front of their face, they can't distinguish it.
But our society is such that confusion abounds and contradiction abounds, and people don't even care to see that because we are a society that says, let's take everything to the lab. Let's apply some science to it. Okay, let's apply some science to the permissiveness that we have engaged in, that we have allowed in our society. And lo and behold, what do we get? Crime. We get divorce rates just going through the roof. I mean, you name it, it's happening. It's multiplied. And so what is this lab? What is this science showing us? That the ways that we have now embraced are most definitely damaging. They are destroying us. But I said it, and I'm going to say it again. We are a confused and a contradictive. We contradict ourselves constantly, society. And so even when the evidence is screaming at us, we say, no, that must be faulty science. Let's get somebody else to apply it in another lab, and then it'll turn out the way we want it to turn out, and that's the one they'll run with.
Yeah, in essence, what you're looking for is someone to promote and agree with your licentious view of things, your sinful way, erroneous way of viewing things, fallacious way to see things, and then try to disseminate that as truth. Even though what we're holding on to, when I mention we, I'm talking about people, of course, who hold on to fallacy, who hold on to evil. They say, yeah, that's the truth. That's the truth. And then they try to promote that agenda. I mean, again, going back to the lyrics, going back to the basis of our argument here, our commentary. When you have a band such as this, it saddens me that you have kids that they know that if they're listening to this, that the message will eventually creep into their soul, will creep into their mind, and it will take hold. It will take over and become the epicenter of their thought life. I've seen it happen on many occasions. I've told many kids, because they come to youth group, and I hear what they're listening to, and I'm like, if you continue to listen to this garbage, if you continue to watch this garbage, if you continue to give your ear, your attention to this garbage, you eventually will become what it is that they are preaching to you to become. And it happens. It's a slow decay, but it's a decay nevertheless. And once it settles in, man, is it hard to eradicate it, because evil is that way where it grips you so much that the only way that can liberate you from that evil, from that filth, is Jesus Christ. But that's the thing. A lot of youth aren't willing to go down that path. They don't want to sacrifice. They don't want to give themselves over to Christ because they understand that it's going to take, what, a rendition of themselves over to Christ so he can complete the work.
Well, what you have just mentioned is something that most young kids, I'm talking about sinners and perhaps a few Christians, when they listen to that, they go like, is he crazy? What kind of a gospel is he presenting to us? That's just so old-fashioned. That is so old school. And Peter says in his first epistle, chapter 4, verse 4, wherein they think it strange that ye run not with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. Sometimes I love the English translation of the Holy Scriptures, and then there are times where the Spanish version just gives me a little insight. And I like what it says here in the Spanish version in 1 Peter 4:4, and it uses the word desenfreno, and it talks about a vehicle that has no brakes.
Yeah.
And so right now, this society is riding this vehicle of false ideas and concepts and philosophies, and there is no brake.
Yeah.
And it continues to pick up speed. And when you are in a vehicle that continues to pick up speed and you don't have a brake, what's inevitable?
You're going to crash.
Exactly.
You're going to crash. Utter destruction is about to happen. You know, I was reading yesterday, and I was looking at some documentary about the life of Noah Webster. And there were some things that really stood out at me about Noah Webster. He's an individual who now I'm very curious about, because not only was he a Christian, but this is a man that put together the first dictionary for Americans. Very studious individual. Young man who left college, left the university to go fight in the American Revolutionary War, and then came back and finished. And he was a person who was just interested in scholarly things. So he puts together, and it's amazing how he put together Webster's first dictionary. He would take about 8 different dictionaries of different languages, whether it be Spanish, German, and he would try to get all of the definitions and join them into one, but he always made sure to use the scriptures as his first and last authority when it came to these definitions. You can find it. And I don't suggest for those of you that are in college or in high school to use the current Merriam-Webster's dictionaries. They're totally watered down. Try to get the older ones. You can even find them online. And you'll find that Webster, in almost, I would say, a great majority of his definitions, you'll find that he always includes some sort of righteousness towards God, especially when he talks about morals, principles. And it is said of Noah Webster that he taught people how to study and not to sin. That is an amazing phrase when you speak about a man's life. He said on many occasions that his whole purpose in life was to get up early, go to sleep early, get up early, to study, take advantage of the day, and always make sure that you are righteous before God and before man. Those were the 4 points that he always looked at. And these are things that this society despises. Not that they don't pay attention to. No, they despise. There's a huge difference between not paying attention, ignoring something, and despising, because they despise what's good. Isaiah speaks about it. Jesus speaks about it. Paul speaks about it. We find it throughout the scriptures, that society despises good. And this is another instance of it. When we're talking about permissiveness, and correct me if I'm wrong here, the reason that young people and adults try to excuse away, justify their evil deeds is because they delight themselves in sinning. Am I right or am I wrong?
Absolutely. And this is the reason why, you know, a few minutes ago when we started this edition, I quoted Proverbs 14, verse 9, fools make a mock at sin. Well, what is the classic verse in the Bible about fools? What does it say? What does a fool think? What does he avoid thinking in his heart?
On foolish things. That's all he thinks about.
And he says there is no God.
There is, exactly.
And so we see that it's something that, it's like a chain, Gio. One link to the other, you know, and until you get this big ball of confusion, you get this tidal wave of error. And so when we take a look at some of these lyrics, and we could spend hours on this, they are all symptoms. They're symptomatic. They're showing us that our society is most definitely trending down, if you will, headed for a big crash. You use the words that will help you understand this. And I don't know how much longer we'll be able to hold the fort, if you will,
yeah,
because this seems like it's inevitable,
yeah,
that this society is going to crash. You look at the financial front, issues there. You look at the political front, issues there. You look at the moral front, issues there. You look at the spiritual front, issues there. It's collapsing, and it's collapsing quickly.
You know, I dare say, and I think you would agree with me in this, that I don't have pity for the person who knows that they're going to give themselves over to something sinful, something that can deter them in their natural sense, in their natural being, and in their spiritual sense. And knowing this, they still continue down that path, even though people say, and they know that the scriptures say, don't go down this path. It's going to be detrimental to you. There's nothing, I can't pity that person because they're willingly going down that path. And it's the same thing, for example, in this simple situation, young people, I listen to it for the beat. No, you don't. You listen to it because you enjoy the lyrical content and you enjoy what they have to say. And this is why you plug in the earphones and are constantly listening to this stuff. The other day on the show, the famous hit show, Glee, it was a scenario where they were playing out of a young teenager going for her first time in a sexual relationship, and at the same time a homosexual couple, if you will, were having sexual relations. And this show is watched not only by adults, this is watched by teenagers. Tell me, please, someone out there tell me, if this is not an indoctrination job. Of course it is. They want to desensitize people that are watching this. They know that there are a lot of young kids watching this, and this is their message to the masses. There's absolutely nothing wrong with this.
You know what is really sad about this? I hear some of the people that grew up on Bing Crosby and some of the other song and dance movie stars of the past, all they can see is, oh, they brought musicals back to television and to the theater. They don't see the damage that is being perpetrated upon society. All they can see is, oh, they have brought back musicals. And I'm listening to this and I'm going like, where's the broom so I can hit
this
them?
Is not Singing in the Rain.
Absolutely. But it goes to show you that for whatever reason, people have stopped thinking. Yeah. They have stopped examining. Gio, if I can, at least in closing my part, and I know we're winding down here, I like to encourage Christians who see things correctly. And by that, I mean they see God's word showing them how to think upon all these issues. I want to encourage them to stay strong in the Lord, because even if all of society goes absolutely corrupt, his keeping power for us is not going to fail.
Absolutely. And also my last advice and counsel is quoting 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 12. There the Apostle Paul tells us that all things are lawful but not helpful, and that he would not allow himself to be under the power of any of them. Why? Because he understood that if he allowed certain things to take control of him, first and foremost, what would suffer is his relationship with Christ. Secondly, his service unto God. Thirdly, his way of being before man, righteousness, would now be damaged. And lastly, his mind. What do we mean by the mind, Gio? What do you mean by that? Well, reprobation. The Bible talks about in Romans, Paul writing to the Romans in his first chapter says that God has handed these people over that have worshipped nature before him and so on and so forth to a reprobate mind, a debased mind, because they can't recognize God, or they would not recognize God in their thoughts. They could not recognize him as the creator. So the first thing is not to allow ourselves to be under the power of any of these things. One of the fruits of the Spirit is self-control. We find this in 2 Peter 1, 5 through 7. So in giving ourselves certain licenses, we could be permitting sin to take over our lives and separate us from God in the process, and that's not what we want. I want to thank you again for being with us. Again, if you have any questions or any references, any future topics that you'd like for us to deal with, please email those to us at info@lwym.org. info@lwym.org. That's all the time that we have left for this podcast. For Pastor Jesus Martinez, this has been Giovanni saying goodbye, and may the Lord shine his face upon you.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or suggested topics for future shows, send them our way to info@lwym.org. That's info@lwym.org. Visit our website in order to download past episodes and subscribe to our free email updates. The web address is www.lwym.org/ATA. This has been Absolute Truth Absolutely. Absolute truth in a world full of uncertainty.